Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, February 24th, 2026. We begin on the first page with an article by D. Jack Alcure, YWCA of McLean County, Working to Rebuild Lives. Clean Energy Grant lets YWCA pivot to manufacturing training. YWCA of McLean County announced in January it was closing its candle store, Labyrinth Made Goods, and all remaining products would be sold at a heavy discount. But that's not the end of the Y's vocational training story. Something more wide-ranging came along. The candles and scents were made by clients in their Labyrinth Outreach Services, which helps formerly incarcerated individuals with re-entry into society with housing, job skills, and training, and all manner of clerical needs. It made sense from the apprenticeship standpoint of things because these individuals are now working to rebuild their lives, said Alicia Whitworth, Vice President of Development and Public Relations. But the grant that was funding Labyrinth at the time lapsed. And since they could not apply for that grant two cycles in a row, people at YWCA had to pivot, Whitworth said, in how they provide skills training. So they decided to create the Certified Manufacturing Associate Apprenticeship Program, said Vicki Hightower, Vice President of Adult Services and Grants. The apprenticeship program contains 25 modules based on manufacturing and engineering basics over 5 weeks. Hightower said, after which each student can take a test to earn a Certified Manufacturing Associate credential. This program is for anyone who's unemployed, underemployed, or would love to get into the manufacturing thing, she said. We are the beneficiaries of a Clean Energy Jobs Act grant, said YWCA President and CEO Liz German. And we also have a partnership with Heartland Community College and some local manufacturers. That includes Rivian Automotive of Normal, Hightower said. They don't have to go to Rivian, she said. They could go anywhere that's manufacturing. And they have this certification now, but Rivian will consider them because they've gone through this. Participants receive a stipend to help with gas and expenses, she said, $100 for a full week and up to $250 for the 5th week. They do the computer-based work here at the YWCA, German said, but it's a Heartland program, and they take their test at Heartland. The goal is to get folks who are unemployed or underemployed or in need of training to find jobs with wages that will sustain a family in this environment, Whitworth said. On the morning of Wednesday, February 11th, Alice Cobb was leading a class of 5 adult students through conversations from metric to standard measures and back. From metric to standard measures and back. The students were given note cards with a word problem like, a drawing from an overseas supplier specifies part length of 150 millimeters, but your measuring tools are marked in inches. In inches, what is your required dimensions? Cobb encouraged the students to work together in groups and use their notebooks for a few minutes to solve the problem. Then she asked everyone to share their answers and how they got there. That is a typical day in the apprenticeship program, sharing, talking, working things out together to get to the answer and making sure that every student learns the skills they need to succeed, Cobb said, to have that light bulb moment. To see them succeed and know that I helped them, impacted their lives to better themselves, to know that they have these opportunities and there are chances out there for them to better their lives, it just makes me feel good knowing that I was there to help, she said. In a very related story, Jack Alcure writes, Labyrinth shifts approach to helping former inmates. The YWCA of McLean County is shifting how the organization helps formerly incarcerated individuals readjust to society. Previously, the staff at YWCA's Labyrinth Reentry Services would receive a call from Illinois Department of Corrections when someone needing services like transitional housing, was being released, sometimes with only hours' notice, said Liz German, president and CEO of the local YWCA. That's really a reactive crisis place to operate from, she said. Going forward, instead of catching people as they try to re-enter the community, the Labyrinth program will have representatives inside three local prisons working with incarcerated people 6 to 12 months ahead of release and for 6 months after, German said. Being in the system ahead of time, this pre-release service that allows folks to build relationships and then have someone they can reach out to have someone to connect with and ask questions of and really build up before coming back into society, German said. Labyrinth Outreach Service to Women was founded as a nonprofit in 2012 with the goal of helping formerly incarcerated women readjust to society and to reduce recidivism before being folded under the YWCA's umbrella in 2016. Labyrinth serves people coming from three prisons in central Illinois, Decatur, Lincoln, and Logan Correctional Centers. In 2020, YWCA launched Labyrinth Made Goods, a social enterprise in which women who have experienced incarceration made and sold candles, gaining practical skills and mentorship while earning money. At that time, the entire Labyrinth program was funded through an R3 grant with the state of Illinois, said Alicia Whitworth, YWCA's vice president of development and public relations. The R3 Restore, Reinvest, Renew program invests 25% of tax revenue from adult use cannabis sales to fund grants that support communities that are most impacted by economic disinvestment, violence, and the severe and multi-layer harm caused by the war on drugs, according to the Office of the Lieutenant Governor. But when the YWCA's R3 grant ended, the organization had to adjust. You cannot get those two grant cycles in a row, Whitworth said. So we had it for one grant cycle. We could not reapply for the second. And that grant funding specifically served on the other end of the prison system when people were already released. Since the grant has ended, YWCA announced at the end of last month that Labyrinth Made Goods was closing, with all remaining products to be sold at 90% off at labyrinthmadegoods.com. Funding for Labyrinth now comes in the form of a grant from the Illinois Department of Human Services Mental Health Division, Whitworth said, and that is specifically for pre-release individuals. Labyrinth and YWCA have identified 5 individuals to be peer recovery specialists, German said, 2 of whom have already completed their training through Heartland Community College and have been cleared by IDOC to work in the prisons with incarcerated individuals. The goal is to have a plan for somewhere to live when they are released, a plan for what they're going to do upon release, Whitworth said. Hopefully, immediately, they will have housing lined up. Immediately, they will have these pieces lined up in an effort to really continue to reduce that recidivism rate. YWCA hopes to serve 50 individuals a year with a variety of needs for re-entry. Working with their clients prior to their release gives Labyrinth the chance to get ahead of necessary bureaucratic hurdles, Whitworth said. Getting a job takes getting IDs. Getting IDs can take months because you need an ID to get an ID, she said. It's like that, you know, stacking kind of list. 2 weeks without IDs can turn into 6 months without a job, could turn into a year without an apartment, so it snowballs. This proactive preparation, getting ahead of it and having this planned approach, it's exactly what we should be doing, German said. This is one of 2 pilot programs in the state that are testing out the proactive instead of reactive method. Does this proactive approach, working with pre-release instead of post-released individuals, how much does that help? And if so, then the state will grow it across other areas. And even though it has been a lengthy process, working with IDOC to identify potential clients and clear Labyrinth's peer recovery specialists, German said she is optimistic that the future is in programs like this. In other local news, we have man accused of injuring deputy by Caitlin Klepek. A man accused of breaking a McLean County deputy's wrist has been detained in the McLean County Jail. J. Jaquia K. Simmons, 24, is charged with aggravated battery of an officer causing great bodily harm, a Class 1 felony, unlawful possession of a controlled substance with 1 to 15 grams of MDMA, a Class 1 felony, unlawful possession of 15 to 100 grams of methamphetamine, a Class 1 felony, 2 counts of aggravated battery on an officer, Class 2 felonies, resisting arrest, a Class 4 felony, unlawful possession of up to 15 grams of a controlled substance identified as MDMA, a Class 4 felony, 2 Class A misdemeanors for resisting a peace officer, Simmons, who did not have a city residence listed in court documents, appeared Friday afternoon before Judge Scott Black, who heard arguments on whether or not he should be detained. According to the probable cause statement on February 18th, Simmons was seen walking along I-55 in McLean County. Assistant State's Attorney David Fitt said an officer saw him on the shoulder walking north. When Simmons noticed the officer approaching, he quickly walked into waist-high grass toward a residence. When the officer activated his vehicle's emergency lights, Simmons scaled a fence and ran toward the residence, Fitt said. The McLean Police Chief and a McLean County Sheriff's Deputy responded to the area and also activated emergency lights. They exited their vehicles and ran toward the defendant, according to the probable cause statement. The defendant continued to run from police and ignored their verbal commands. The chief and the deputy eventually caught him and took him into custody. The prosecutor said during his arrest, Simmons struggled with the two officers, kicked the deputy several times, grabbed his left wrist, and twisted it, resulting in a fracture. The officers secured Simmons' left wrist with a handcuff, but he grabbed the loose cuff and forced it into the deputy's injured wrist, Fitt said. Once he was detained, officers found Simmons possessed about 21 grams of a substance that contained MDMA and fentanyl, according to the probable cause statement. The deputy was transported to OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington, where he was treated for a fractured wrist. In arguing for his release, Assistant Public Defender Stuart Wallace questioned whether the deputy's injury should qualify as great bodily harm, noting the severity of the charge. Fitt said the injury is severe enough to put the officer out of work for a significant period of time. He argued no conditions of release would mitigate the risk Simmons poses. Black granted the prosecution's petition to deny Simmons pretrial release and ordered he be detained. Simmons is scheduled for an arraignment at 9 o'clock a.m. on March 13th. Olivia Jacob writes, Sharks, Fish, and Chicken opens in BN. Sharks, Fish, and Chicken is now officially open in Bloomington. The business at 711 East Washington Street held its grand opening on Monday. We're excited to be opening our newest Sharks, Fish, and Chicken location here in Bloomington, owner S.A.J. Quatum told the Pantograph. We're looking forward to serving the Bloomington community. Katoum said Sharks is a family-owned business that started in 2019 in Decatur. This marks the fifth Sharks location in central Illinois, with two in Decatur, one in Springfield, one in Champaign, and now one in Bloomington. The restaurant specializes in wings, tenders, fish, shrimp, Philly cheesesteaks, and fresh, never-frozen burgers. Additionally, Katoum said all of the menu items are hand-breaded and made fresh to order. Each order takes about 8 to 11 minutes to make from the time they are placed. Katoum encourages customers to order online so their food is ready when they arrive, but Sharks also offers dine-in and delivery through DoorDash. Sharks is open 10:30 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Thursday, until 11 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, and from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Sunday. Sharks Fish and Chicken is not related to Sharky's at 1715 Bradford Lane in Normal. You can order Sharks online by visiting clover.com/online-ordering/sharks-fish2-chicken-bloomington. Next, we'll read Jerry Vogler's Veterans Corner. VFW Polar Plunge Fundraiser for Special Olympics. Veterans of Foreign Wars, VFW, Post 454, will be participating in the 2026 Polar Plunge on February 28th at Miller Park Lake. Each year, this event raises money for Special Olympics Illinois, which has its headquarters in Normal. It's above freezing now, but who knows what the temperature will be on February 28th. But freezing or not, VFW 454 is doing the Polar Plunge. You do not have to be a member of VFW Post 454 to participate in the Polar Plunge, and all are welcome to do it. If plunging is not your thing, you can still donate to the VFW 454 Plunge team or to an individual. Sign-ups or donate online at support.soill.org/team/785262. There is a registration fee to participate. Come join us in the plunge or just have a good laugh at those of us who do. It's all in good fun and supports a great cause. People think that normal life goals must be set aside when you enter the military. However, the military realizes that the same people who excel at non-military related activities may also have what it takes to be successful members of the military. 8 U.S. military athletes represented the United States at the Milan Cortina Olympic Games, bringing with them a world of experience in the armed forces and now in various Olympic competitions, from cross-country skiing to bobsledding, biathlon, and figure skating. This winter Olympic Games featured Army Specialist Azaria Hill in the bobsled events, Army Sergeant Frank Duca in the two-man and four-man bobsled, Army Staff Sergeant Deidre Irwin in the biathlon, Air Force Staff Sergeant Kelly Curtis in the skeleton, Air Force Senior Airman Jasmine Jones in the two-woman bobsled, Army Private Spencer Howe in pairs figure skating, Army Sergeant Ben Loomis in Nordic combined, and Army Specialist Sean Daugherty in the biathlon, according to the Department of Defense. The military has a program entitled World Class Athlete that makes training and competing in their sport part of their military duty, which also includes representing the military all over the world as they compete. Those who served in the armed forces are all special in their own way, and thank you, Olympians. Here's a question and answer. I served in the Army over 40 years ago and never enrolled in any VA programs for health, education, or other benefits. I recently applied for VA healthcare but cannot find my DD-214. Isn't there some way besides filling out a form to the government to request my form? I really need it now. Answer is requesting your DD-214 from the National Personnel Records Center in St. Louis may take a few days or more. However, if you have visited the McLean County Veterans Assistance Commission office, a copy of your DD-214 may be on file. If you call the Veterans Assistance Commission office at 309-888-5140, the VAC staff will check the commission files to see if they have a copy. A second local source, the McLean County Recorder's Office, may have a certified copy of your DD-214. This will only work if you recorded it at the recorder's office after you separated. If you returned after military service to a different county, you may have recorded your form at that county's recorder's office. If so, check with them to see if they have a copy. If they require an in-person visit to pick up the copy, ask if they will email a copy to your local VAC office, and we can then identify in person who will receive the copy. Either method will be quicker than contacting the National Personnel Records Center if you have recorded your DD-214 with the county. The military's tuition assistance program remains one of the most generous education benefits available to active duty service members. The program pays up to 100% tuition and authorized fees, capped at $250 per semester credit hour and $4,500 per fiscal year, for volunteer off-duty education at accredited schools. While many service members utilize tuition assistance during their service time, sadly, many do not or cannot use the program. Obstacles to this includes duty responsibilities, deployments, field exercise, and unpredictable work schedules. Other obstacles involve the TA enrollment process itself, with multiple layers of complexity, including having to select approved schools, create education plans, and request authorization before classes start, etc. Also, command discretion presents a variety of difficulties to approval, such as deployment preparation or readiness training, which conflict with TA program attendance if approved. A final obstacle is the availability to get education assistance after the member separates through GI Bill, VA education benefits, as well as state-supported education assistance like the Illinois Veterans Grant Program. Online courses make it a little easier to use TA if they are available. It's a great start if you can do it. And we finish with the quote of the day. He says, "Here we go again, another shutdown. We mostly survived the first shutdown last fall, but our economic growth, according to government reports, caused our economy to slow, which of course means the slowing of the job market. This hurts people. It is far past the time for the politicians to stop childish one-upmanship and keep the country running. We are a great country composed of citizens who apparently are far better than the ones we elected to represent us. Voting opportunities to make our choice of who will represent us will come up in a matter of weeks. Don't give up your rights and obligations to elect people we can be proud of and we can trust to represent us in our vision of the future." Alexander Hamilton said, "Men often oppose a thing merely because they have no agency in planning it or because it may have been planned by those whom they dislike." Close quote. Back to the first page on economy, we have businesses wary after tariff ruling by May Anderson with the AP. Businesses face a new wave of uncertainty after the Supreme Court struck down tariffs imposed by President Donald Trump under an emergency powers law, and Trump vowed to work around the ruling to keep his tariffs in place. The Trump administration says its tariffs help boost American manufacturers and reduce the trade gap, but many U.S. businesses had to raise prices and adjust to offset higher costs caused by the import taxes. It remains to be seen how much relief businesses and consumers will actually get from Friday's ruling. Within hours of the court's decision, Trump pledged to use a different law to impose a 10% tariff on all imports that would last 150 days. On Saturday, he said he'd raise that to 15%. He also said he'd explore other ways to impose more tariffs. With the administration likely to rebuild tariffs through other, more durable means, the overall tariffs rate may yet end up settling close to current levels, said Michael Pierce, an economist at Oxford Economics. Efforts to claw back the estimated $133 billion to $175 billion collected in tariffs, now deemed illegal, are bound to be complicated and likely will favor larger companies with more resources. Consumers are unlikely to receive refunds. Many businesses braced for years of court battles. Basic Fun, a Florida-based maker of toys such as Lincoln Logs and Tonka Trucks this month, joined other businesses in a lawsuit seeking to claw back tariffs paid to the government. While the company's CEO, Jay Foreman, is concerned about new tariffs Trump may impose, he doesn't think they will affect toys. Still, he said, "I do worry about some type of perpetual fight over this, at least for the next 3 years." Ron Koenig owns Superior Coffee Roasting Company in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, across the border from Canada. In addition to U.S. tariffs, Koenig faced retaliatory tariffs from Canada for much of last year when he exported his coffee. "It's like a nightmare we just want to wake up from," said Koenig, whose company raised prices by 6% twice since the tariffs took effect. While he's pleased with the Supreme Court ruling, he doesn't think he will ever see a refund. A wide array of industries, including retail, tech, and the agricultural sector, used the ruling as an opportunity to remind Trump of how his trade policies affected their businesses. The Business Roundtable, a group that lobbies on behalf of more than 200 U.S. companies, released a statement encouraging the administration to limit the focus of tariffs going forward to specific unfair trade practices and national security concerns. In the retail industry, stores of all stripes embrace different ways to offset the effects of tariffs, from absorbing some of the costs themselves to cutting expenses and diversifying their supply network. Still, they had to pass on some price increases at a time when shoppers were particularly sensitive to inflationary pressures. David French, Executive Vice President of Government Relations for the National Retail Federation, the nation's largest retail industry trade group, said he hoped lower courts would ensure a seamless process to refund tariffs. That issue was not addressed in Friday's ruling. For the technology sector, Trump's tariffs cause major headaches. Many of its products are built overseas or depend on imports of key components. The Computer and Communications Industry Association, which represents technology companies that employ more than 1.6 million people, expressed hope that the ruling will ease trade tensions. Farmers, stung by higher prices for equipment and fertilizer and reduced demand for their exports since the tariffs took effect, also spoke out. "We strongly encourage the president to avoid using any other available authorities to impose tariffs on agricultural inputs that would further increase costs," the American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duval said. The Supreme Court ruled 6-3 that the International Emergency Economic Powers Act does not give the president authority to tax imports, a power that belongs to Congress. The decision only affects tariffs imposed under that law. It leaves in effect tariffs on steel, upholstered furniture, kitchen cabinets, and bathroom vanities, according to the Home Furnishing Association, which represents 15,000 furniture stores in North America. The aluminum that Revolution Brewing in Chicago uses for cans costs as much as the ingredients that go inside them because of the tariffs Trump placed on metals that are not affected by the ruling. The aluminum comes from Canada, and Josh Death, managing partner at the brewery, said, "Everything kind of adds up." Italian winemakers, hard hit by the tariffs, greeted the Supreme Court decision with skepticism, warning that the decision may just deepen uncertainty around trade with the U.S. The U.S. is Italy's largest wine market. Sales tripled in value over the last 20 years. New tariffs on the EU, which the Trump administration initially threatened, would be 200%, sent fear throughout the industry, which remained even after the U.S. reduced, delayed, and negotiated it down. There is a more than likely risk that tariffs will be reimposed through alternative legal channels, compounded by the uncertainty this ruling may generate in commercial relations between Europe and the U.S., said Lamberto Frescobaldi, president of UIV, a trade association that represents more than 800 winemakers. Elsewhere in Europe, initial reaction focused on renewed confusion regarding costs facing businesses exporting to the U.S. Trump's tariffs could hit pharmaceuticals, chemicals, and auto parts, said Karsten Breske, an economist at ING Bank. "Europe should not be mistaken," he said. "This ruling will not bring relief." And with that, we conclude the reading of Part 1 of the Pantograph for Tuesday, February 24th, 2026. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with Part 2.